We are on the air. We're recording. All right. Let me check levels. Blah, blah, bleep, bloop. Where is it?
Source. Bleep, blah, blah.
Yeah, all right. Okay, it's recording. Theme music. Wow. Happy New Year. Welcome to the first episode of Webcomics Weekly for the year of our Lord 2008.
Or CE 2008 if you are non-denominational.
How does it feel?
And so far, it's a great year. I'm really excited about 2008.
It's been 4 days, yeah. Brad. Calm down.
We've got so much going on for 2008. I literally want to fast forward 2 months, get into convention season, and just start going.
Well,
that's actually true.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Let's get let's slow down, guys.
There's the hang up. We all hung up at the same time. We were all behind at the exact same moment.
You know why? Because no one's been introduced properly yet. Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. At the top of my list here in Skype, we're all kind of still recovering from the holidays. We're all from in our homes individually. At the top of my list, over in the Dallas region of the Tejas, is our own air sick moth, Christopher Straub with StarslipCrisis.com.
That's a party favor.
Oh. Below him in only list on Skype and in no other way, over in Los Angeles, where I'm sure it's a wonderful 70 degrees, Dave Kellett of SheldonComics.com.
Oh, hello. You'd be surprised to know that we're actually in monsoon rainy season here in California all of a sudden.
Huh. Oh, really?
Yeah, we got winds between 30 and 80 miles an hour all of a sudden.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Glad I left.
Anyway, and finally on the list is our dear friend from Philadelphia, Brad. Don't call him Wigs, Wigwam Geiger of evil-comic.com.
Oh, dem golden slippers.
What does that mean?
It takes too long to get into here, but every year in Philadelphia, there's what's called a mummer's parade, where guys dress up in feathers and stuff and play in what's called a string band, which is usually banjos, accordions, and saxophones. And that's the central song that they play is Golden Slippers.
Oh.
It goes further than that, but it's like a real big tradition every year on the January 1st.
Wow.
Philadelphia, odd city, huh?
Philadelphia is great. Now we could do a whole podcast on Philly, but we won't.
But we won't.
Because Brad is going to start one.
I think.
Yeah, I got dibs.
Before we move on, I just think worst compromise the U.S. ever made by moving the capital to D.C. Philly would have been a great capital.
Did it start in Philly?
Yeah.
Thank you, public education system. Another fact I didn't know.
America's education system, messing up children since 1843.
Notice how I blame the system and not my complete lack of concentration while doodling in school.
Well, if they had done it right, you would have paid attention.
Exactly, Chris. Thank you.
Did you guys doodle a lot?
There we go.
Of course.
I doodled constantly, yeah.
Yeah. My main, every report card said the same thing. Every comment was, if Scott put as much effort into his schoolwork as he did his cartoons, he'd be an A student.
I got to the point where I was doodling so much that I could take more effective notes through doodling than through taking actual notes. I could trace my pen over top of the ink line. And I could hear the professor's voice. It was almost like a recording, you know. Oh. It was really weird. It was like I would get into it. I don't know whether it was a trance state or what, but I could really go back and hear that stuff.
Wow, I wish I had thought to do that.
It's almost like a physical mnemonic then.
Yeah, yeah, it was really effective note taking for me.
See, what I did?
Yeah.
What I did was I took my sketchbook to my truck, got breakfast at McDonald's, and parked in the parking lot, listened to Stern, and sketched. That did not work out, and skipped class.
Well, what did the notes say?
Take off your top.
But you remembered.
Yes, I can tell you, I can, through my sketches, I can relate every Howard Stern show episode in the 1990s. 1989 through 1992.
The system works.
I got them all.
Yes, Jessica Hahn.
Yeah. This picture here of Captain Amazing swinging over the city helps me mnemonically remember Jessica Hahn. That's right. So what's on the plate?
Shall we get into it for the year?
Let's
exactly.
do it. Let's roll up our sleeves and get our hands in web comics.
Before we dive into our first questions in the mailbag, do we want to go over our resolutions for 2008? Or is that lame?
I don't know. That sounds pretty lame to me. Sounds like a really lame idea, real stupid, don't you think, Brad?
What's resolutions?
Oh, I think it could be. It, I think it could have merit.
No, I don't think it has any merit. I think it's pretty lame, pretty hyper lame.
I've got the first resolution. My resolution is to think before I open my mouth next time we're talking about show ideas.
Well, all right. Fine, never mind.
No, I want to do them. I really like the idea.
All right. Well, Scott, you start us off then, Scott. I know you're the energetic one about the resolution, so let's...
My webcomic New Year's resolutions are to refocus on the three core tiers of my... I just realized that my... table analogy I was about to make was flawed because it only has three legs. This table I've built. I need a fourth leg to focus on the three legs of the table of my business, which is the strip itself and the website, the comic book, and the store, and just really focus everything on making those the best they can be. And I want to double my income from last year. And I think I can do it.
You know what, Scott? That means that your business is a stool, and that's fine.
Oh, that's right. That's what I meant. It's a stool. And I'm sitting my fat ass on it.
So what you need now is you just need to get a sample on that stool, and then you can go.
Hey, Brad, you were right.
Yeah.
You were right. I take it back. This is lame. This is a lame segment.
All right. Well, I will go next so that you do not feel hurt, Scott. Because I thought those were good resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
So my two resolutions for the year are I'm not going to be able to go to as many cons this year as I did last year. So that's a bit of a bummer from a business perspective. But my goal is to raise my gross income by a third this year, and to spend less time on AIM in support of goal number one. Those are my two goals.
Oh, my God. That's smart.
That is good.
We'll miss you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I waste so much dang time on AIM when I could be working on different either creative projects or economic projects that time waste.
Wait a minute. You mean you're going to create a new username that only me, Brad, and Chris know before you do that, right? You'll still talk to us.
Right. No, when I, you know what, actually, that's not a bad idea to start a new one. But in general, I want to have it on less because I find that I get less work done when I have it on.
You're right.
You've already started that, haven't you?
I have, actually.
I've noticed over the last couple of weeks, I usually when I come in and I turn my work computer on, and I usually catch you at least once a day, and I haven't seen you on there hardly at all. And I've actually been worried about you.
Yeah, no, honestly, because at least two or three times a day, I'll message Brad and go, "Where's Dave?
Yeah.
Is he okay? Where did he go?
We were just, We were just talking about you Thursday, Dave. It's like, I hope he's okay. Yeah, I see he's updating his blog, you know, and he's for email.
I've got YouTube links of dancing monkeys for that SOB.
Yeah, Dave, I want you to know, Dave, that I wasn't worried about you. I was just pissed.
Brad and I know where Chris is, but we didn't know where Dave was. And we had this Subways versus Quiznos thing that we needed his input on desperately.
Which one's better? Do you like the new flatbread Sammy's?
Dave, you agree, don't you? I mean, toasty, right?
I most definitely do. And you know what?
Eat fresh. Eat fresh, Brad.
I apologize.
Eat fresh for life.
Eat fresh.
Sorry, Jared.
Oh, my gosh.
I have a huge tattoo on my stomach.
Exactly. Tattooed across your chest and just eat fresh.
Every time I hear Subway versus Quiznos, I can hear Mike Waringo's voice in that voicemail where he called me and said, "Hey, Scott, what do you guys talk about? Subway versus Quiznos? Anyway, Jim Buckley sucks." That's a callback to a joke where we were discussing how for a short period of time, every post in my forums eventually the thread digressed into how much Tim Buckley stunk, and we didn't know how to deter it. It just kept going there.
Yeah.
And Chris, one day we're on the phone with Mike Waringo, and we were discussing it, and Chris goes, "I'm going to start a new thread that goes, hey guys, what do you think? What are you guys talking about? Subway versus Quiznos? Anyway, Tim Buckley sucks." And God, Ringo thought that was so funny.
That's your standard, why would you ever debate this talk?
See, because in my head now, Control-Delete is branded Subway versus Quiznos. I see those commercials, and I'm like, he should license those characters to Quiznos, not Family Guy.
So when you read Control-Delete, do you get hungry?
Yes. Also, when I walk into a bookstore, I have to poop.
Why? It's just kind of a general.
I'll tell you why. This is our first rat hole of the year. I was in a bookstore with my friend Gary, and he goes, "Well, it's happened. I have to go poop." And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Every time I spend any time at a bookstore, I eventually have to poop. I think it's because I read in the toilet." And he goes, "And now that I've brought that to your attention, it will happen to you because someone did it to me." And I said, "No, it won't." And now every time I walk into a Barnes & Noble or a Borders, within 10 minutes, I got to go to the John.
Don't you realize you've just infected all the listeners?
Yes.
They've been in a bookstore.
2008, everybody. 2008. Going to be a good year for all of us.
But the thing is, the worst part of it is you're not going to make it home, and you want to read something, but you have nothing to read, and yet you're surrounded with books.
And they won't let you take them in.
No. I think there was a Seinfeld episode about that.
There was.
Well, how about your New Year's resolution, Chris?
Yeah. This Uh-oh. Is lame at home. Lame at home for us.
You know what would be awesome if Chris's resolution was talk to Dave more on AIM.
the reverse. Decrease my business by one third. Yeah. Increase Dave's business by one third. I was intrigued by Gary's post at Fleen about the $10 per reader thing.
$10, yeah.
Now, I don't know how attainable that is.
I wish someone would explain it to me because I did not understand it.
Well, he's saying you've got to strive to what was the timeline on that? Was it a monthly or a yearly thing?
No, just a year. Get every reader.
Gives
the
you
idea $10. To give you
$10,
yeah.
Over the course of the year, and then you got it made.
Yeah, I would have it made.
And Dave, there you go. Have some good thoughts on how exactly you do that.
How do I? Well, we started talking about it among cartoonists separately. How you do that. And my theory is that, broadly, I think John Rosenberg hit on a sort of a magic number for me a long time ago, which is that I think, and it's in large part, I found it to be true. And in talking to other cartoonists saying it's mostly true, is that roughly 10% of your readership over the course of the year will buy something. And for some reader or some cartoon web cartoonists, that'll be about 5%. And for some people, it'll be maybe 12, 13, 14%. But in general, the ballpark of 5 to 10% is probably accurate. But my addendum to that is that the best way to get your earnings per reader up, so whether you have 100,000 readers or whether you have 1,000 readers, your goal is to get a high earnings per reader, meaning you want them on an individual basis or average it out to spend X amount of money. And the way you do that is to have three tiers of product offering of low price, mid price, high price. Whoa, what was that? Who's out by Motorcycle Central?
that was me.
Wow.
That was some kid riding his choppa past my window. Sorry.
Are you in Orange County?
Suddenly,
right now?
Mikey. Suddenly, Scott's working on the NASCAR track. All right, here they come.
hold on a second. Pew, pew, pew.
I just got to finish up this job.
Yeah.
So anyway, the thought was that you have three tier structures of pricing, low price, mid price, and high price. And the low price items are like under $5 tchotchkes, which have little or nothing to do with your strip. Because for the most part, people are buying low price stuff for the thing itself. So it's either a bumper sticker that's really funny, or it's a button, or it's some little tchotchke that's under $5. And then the next is the mid-price, and that's sort of our bread and butter, and those are the $10 to $30 items. And that's usually either a book or a T-shirt or a book T-shirt combo or an artist edition on a book or a poster or, you know, all the sorts of standard bread and butter items that a webcomic offers. And then my theory was that a lot of people drop the ball by not offering a high-price item, which is sort of an above $50 item. Because that brings your whole average of per reader up and raises your earning per reader entirely. If you can sell, you know, 100 to 1,000 $50 plus items over the course of a year, then your earnings per reader just shot right way up. And so that's why I was saying is that I think a lot of web cartoonists drop the ball on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I think a lot of web cartoonists have a hard time having the confidence to charge high prices for their stuff. I think it comes from a sense of insecurity as opposed to poor planning.
Yep. No, I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right.
Because I've underpriced my original art for a long time. And I think that you would even... I think right now one of my originals is $79. Now, would you guys think that's too high or too low or just right?
I think that's pretty good. It might be even a little low.
They're textless, right? And by that I mean there's no words on them?
They are textless, yeah. They're also tasteless.
Ba-dum-boom. All right, have a good week, everybody. No, yeah, I think 79 is about right.
All right.
What's the size on those, Scott?
They're like 18 by 6.
Okay, so they're pretty good sized.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say for me, especially given your strip, I would say that you could probably experiment with going a little higher on that.
What I might do is take the time to put the words back in for people and charge them.
Yeah.
In other words, you get a random piece of art, and then if you want to pay extra, I'll put the words back in for you, I guess.
And that's what like, I do with that's the, like 8 signatures. That's a lot of text to write.
It is a lot of text to write. I've already talked myself out of it, but I didn't want to say it. I'll edit this out in post.
What I do with my originals for Evil Incorporated, I don't have the text on those either, but I work at 13 wide by 4 inches deep, and I buy 11 by 17 transparent film, and I print the words off from the comic itself off on the film.
Oh.
I overlay the film over top of the original art, frame it all up. It has that animation cell kind of feel. And it works out really, really nicely.
It looks really nice because you've sent me originals of crossover strips before, and they really look classy.
Yeah, it ends up looking okay, yeah.
Yeah, I really cherish the Evil Ink original that I have on my wall. Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't have it. It sits right here on my imaginary wall.
So anyway, my New Year's resolution is to start sending out more original art to my friends.
Jeez,
no, it's too late. It's too late.
And to self-publish and to get underway self-publishing for real this year. And in other words, getting the whole nine yards the way you know Dave and you guys do with placing the order, storing the books, shipping myself. Taking on all those things once and for all, and I'm pretty excited about that.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, I guess I keep forgetting, Brad, that you haven't done that yet.
No, I'm raring to go.
I'm excited for it. I think it's going to make, if not a dramatic difference this first year, by the end of next year, it will have made a huge difference to your business, I think.
Let us know when you want to, and we'll try to use our influence to get you a good price at TransCon or a good quote.
Cool. I definitely will.
Because I really like them. Did you?
Yeah, they were good.
You're happy with the way it turned out, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah. They were very good to me.
Yeah.
They're the ones in Canada?
Yep.
Yeah, they used to be Image for a while. Image, I think Image might have used it as a ploy to get a better price at Quebecor, although I don't think it was intentional. But they moved from Quebecor for some of their books to Transcontinental for their black and white books. And I really liked the pricing at Transcontinental. I saw it in my Image paychecks. You could see the money that I was saving. And wow. And then I think Quebecor gave them a better price to go back. But I really liked their quality. I don't like Quebecor for some reason.
I did my first book through Quebecor, and comparing that against Chris's book at TransCon, the most recent one, Chris, I think yours came out much, much better.
Hmm.
I think
which book?
I think some
did you do through Quebecor.
Was it Huza?
What
did you say?
What book were you talking about? I mean, I know mine, but yours.
No. My first book, Pure Ducky Goodness, was done through Quebecor.
Oh.
I think sometimes Quebecor gets a little bit of who the hell are you syndrome? Like, they're so busy with everybody's stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I really do think that happens sometimes.
However, whenever I've talked to them, they're always very pleasant and eager to do business again. It's just, I think you're right, though, Scott. I think they're just very big.
Yeah. It's
However,
easy to get lost
I've always
in them.
I've always thought that if Quebecor was an empire in some future sci-fi world, they would be a great empire name. The Quebecor Empire.
The Quebecor Empire?
The rebels fighting against the Quebecor Empire, I think it sounds like.
I love talking to my rep there. It's a treat with her accent. Hello, le bon fond, Quebecor, croissant.
Le bon fond. That's really the reason why you want to go with a Canadian printer.
And you know what? I think it's great that in true Web Comics Weekly fashion, we're starting off the year with some gentle American racism, and that's fantastic. Bonjour!
So what we're saying, kids, is when you, and this is in the book, when you go to print your first, book, avoid the frogs, all right?
Right.
Because, look, you want someone that when they hit you're going to hit a snag when you print a book sometimes, and when a company hits a snag, you want them to fix the problem, not surrender, and that's what...
You know what's great is that our one listener in Quebec right now has a single tear rolling down his cheek.
And there's one listener in Quebec going, ooh, ooh.
He's going, zut alors.
Whatever. He's too busy outside planting trees to shade his German neighbor's walking the dog. That joke failed. The minute it started leaving my mouth, it failed.
Hey,
I just want you to know that.
Not getting involved in these jokes. All right. Here we go. Moving right along.
I have good no job. Problem with the French. That's just being shock value.
So, all right. So, Brad, coming back to your resolution. So, your resolution was to start in on independent printing. And what was the other one again?
Send more original art to my friend.
Oh.
thanks for reminding me.
Okay.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
I had actually genuinely forgotten. I wasn't trying to go back on that.
So that turned into a good segment, and I'm glad I suggested it.
Well, I tell you what, boys, let's dip into the mailbag. What do you say?
Please.
Let's dip into the old mailbag. Brad, do you want to start us off for the year? I think it's only appropriate.
Yeah, I think I will. You know, I'm just looking through here, and I've got one that I think would be fun to talk about. This one's sent in by Jason Holm, and his comic, I believe it's called Gallardo, is at inflatablestudios.com.
Hmm.
And he says, what's your advice for the wannabes, and put that in quotes, that you meet at conventions? You know, the kids going, hey, I'm a cartoonist, want to see... And they show you their sketchbook. How do you handle that? What is some of the typical sort of thing that you tell a person like that? And what would you like to see that conversation go like at its best?
Brad, ooh, was he writing this from a wannabe standpoint or a not wannabe standpoint?
He's writing it from the standpoint of a wannabe. In other words, I think what he's saying is, what's the best way to approach somebody at a convention, and what do we generally find ourselves saying over and over again when we're in that situation?
My initial thought is, don't give a 10-minute explanation of what is going on in your strip. Because I've had people come up and ask for, for a comment or whatever. But then they'll have this very elaborate, very drawn out of how it's been 10 years in the making, and this plot device and this storyline and all that. And I want to be polite and nod and smile. But at the same time, I'm actually thoroughly disinterested with all of the people's work.
So. And well, you know what? Chris, I have to apologize for giving you that long-run explanation of Sheldon.
I get the gist of it. There's a duck and...
We get it. Grandpa duck, whack, whack, pug, funny lizard. All right. Next.
Next.
I'm gonna be the bad guy here. Here's the question. The question really should be, should you show your work to somebody? Other than just maybe... get your foot in the door in terms of starting a conversation. And here's what I'm getting at. Have you guys ever given a really, really honest review of somebody's work when they give it to you in that circumstance?
No.
Never have.
See what I mean? I have.
How did that go for you?
You're holding a T-bone steak to one
eye. The thing was, it was one of those situations where there was going to be no way for me to give a nice, I'm going to spare your feelings or whatever, review of it. There was just going to be no way. The guy had basically taken photos of little everyday objects to make a strip, the characters of a strip, which is not necessarily, I'm a bad idea if you execute it properly.
I know what strip you're talking about.
You know which one I'm talking about, yeah. And I sat down with the guy and basically said, look, if you're going to do this, you already are... I've sat next to Eric Larson at conventions, and Eric does not pull any punches. And I asked him what his philosophy on that was. I just said, don't you think you're being a little harsh? How can you do that? And he's like, look, I'm not paying them any service by telling them that it's great when it's not. I'm not doing them any service. I need to let them know what they need to work on, and then they'll work on it and come back. Because if he says he's been in it for a long time, and the people that he's nice to come back the next year and have changed nothing, but the people that he's honest with come back, and either they don't come back or they come back and they've changed something. So it's a little harder for me, because I know a lot of times the people that are coming to show me my stuff are coming to me because my work inspired them. And with Larson, they're coming to him because he's a publisher. He's in a position of power to maybe get them work. And so it's a different approach. And I feel like there's something, except for the people that approach Eric because they are fans of Eric's work, which is, I'm sure, a lot of them. But when people approach me because they're a fan of my work and they start off with PvP's really inspired me, it's hard for me to crap on their work if I don't like it or if I see problems with it.
Right.
The bottom line is that if they're real serious about it, they need to get used to getting their hearts broken anyway. Because if we don't do it, their fans or their readers are going to be doing it. So they need to start. It's a part of the process. It's a part of making the art, is dealing with the critiques and the people that are disinterested in it. And so if it's got to start at my table, then it might as well start at my table. I tend to get exhausted sometimes with the process myself, because it's a difficult process on both ends. And I always, the best thing I can do is, this is kind of a fallback on me, I end every kind of really constructive and criticism batch, especially when they're very constructive and full of criticism, I always end it with, how old are you? And when they say 17, 18, I say, you've got plenty of time. Draw every day, you know?
What about when they say that I'm 28?
Well,
I'm 30.
Still, you know what? It's easier for me to say that now when they're 28 because I'm 36. I'm going to be 37 here in a couple months. So,
Scott, I am 87.
How do I make it work for me? I've got 6 months to go. How do I make it click?
You just hand him a shovel.
Oh, God. Jeez.
See, that's why I don't give honest.
Oof. Fuck.
Well, that's
ageism, dude.
Generally, if you're taking your sketchbook to a comic convention, I think you've got to really wonder whether you're getting honest reviews or whether you're getting somebody telling you the nicest thing possible just to kind of make the situation go smoothly. You know what I mean? Because I very rarely have given an honest review to somebody standing at my table. I try to find the most positive thing I can say, accentuate the positive, and hope the other things come up on their own.
Yeah.
But gee whiz, I don't know. I've been there. I don't like that's a position I really don't like when I'm at a comic convention.
But I honestly say,
can I tell you?
I honestly say either be honest or just tell them you don't critique.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true.
I have two thoughts on the matter. One, it's the most fun I've ever seen is watching Brad squirm at a comic convention when he's critiquing someone else's work. I don't know. Brad is the most wonderful part of your Midwest personality, watching you try to be polite when someone has handed you like a scratching on a chicken napkin. A chicken napkin.
What the heck is a chicken napkin?
I meant to say a chicken scratching on a napkin. But watching Brad's face when he's trying to clearly choke back vomit, but trying to be nice at the same time is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. But, okay, so here's my thought on the process. So, you guys know, in general, in broad strokes, I mean, I can be an SOB as much as the next person, but in broad strokes, I'm a pretty nice guy. So my theory is when people come up to ask me to critique their art, that in and of itself is an unfair request. So me being kind just for the sake of being kind is in turn an unfair but equally unfair response. And so why not do it? Because I'm not gonna change their career. I'm not gonna make their career. I'm not gonna have any noticeable impact at all, regardless of the words I say. So I might as well just be nice to them because they're making an unfair request to me. So I might as well be unfair back to them and give them a kind word about whatever I can find.
Why is it an unfair request for them to ask you to critique their work?
Because, and this is one of the best advice that Charles Schulz ever said, is that he said, if you can't see what's wrong with your own work, you're never gonna make it.
But they need to learn how to see what's wrong with their work.
Okay, well, if you have to cultivate that eye on yourself. If I told you, Chris, right now, the five things you need to change in your life, would you do them? Or is it better when you learn it yourself?
Well, to be honest, of course, everybody wants to learn it from themselves. But coming from you, Dave, I believe it.
I see where you're coming from, Dave, but
I think you're being dishonest with yourself. If you're saying to yourself, I'm going to go up, and I'm going to ask Scott Kurtz what he thinks, and whatever Scott says, I'm going to do. I mean, maybe you would try it, but the thing is, if you find anything unfair or wounding about what Scott says, which is probably what's going to happen, you're not going to internalize that information, and you're not going to make that change.
I've had two experiences where I went up to people, and actually three experiences where I've gone up to people at professional shows and shown them my work because they inspired me, and each one of them yielded positive results for me. The first one was Jeff Smith, who told me, look, if you're asking me how to start your own self-publishing business, then you have no business doing it. If you don't know, if you haven't already done the research yourself and pounded the pavement, don't bother. Because it takes someone who knows, who has the wherewithal to do that. And I think he was tired of being asked the question and people's eyes blurring over when he didn't just say, oh, just draw funny animals and they'll come to your door. But you know, it left him an impression with me, and he could have easily have just said, you know, your stuff is great, just send it to people. The second time was I showed Sergio Aragonés my Captain Amazing book in 1995, and he looked at it and told me that it had really great line art, and he loved it. And then he opened the first page and just started flipping through it and pointing out how all my hands were incorrect, and you know. I hadn't, you know, he told me, you know, if you're going to draw someone holding a gun, go buy a toy gun and hold it and look at it. And it had never, I mean, I guess I'd seen people do it. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that I've always had positive results with it myself, but don't ask unless you really want to know what they say. Don't ask if you're just looking for someone to validate you. Go knowing you're going to get advice and critiques and be told what to change. I don't know. The problem I have, Dave, is that I think what's unfair is a lot of people don't come up with artwork because they're looking for a critique or even an opportunity. A lot of people are coming up to me at shows with their printed, you know, mini comic that they made at Kinko's, walking up, sauntering up to me and talking to me like they're me. Like, hey, here's my thing. You want to swap books? Yeah, webcomics is awesome. You know, we're both in the biz, that kind of thing. And that's the part that bugs me.
Well, that's just more of a rudeness. That's kind of in a Brad Midwestern sort of way. I would never assume that anybody would want my book or to trade for my book, you know? So I think it's sort of a hubris on someone's part to come up with a mini comic and say, hey, let's swap, champ. We're best friends, you know? So that's a personality thing.
Yeah. Well, especially when they want to swap and they've got four pieces of copier paper stapled in the center.
Yeah, and they want one of the books that you spent all that money printing.
Money and time.
Chris, you and I have dealt with that before at the same time, right?
I was at one of those.
Well, it was one of those shows where you and I looked at each other and we were like, it's so rude to say this out loud, but how could they come up and say, hey, here's my copier paper pieces I stapled together today asymmetrically? What's the word?
Asymmetrically,
thank you. I would like to swap it for your $14 book that you had printed professionally. And have not broken even on yet.
Right. That's the critical thing.
Yeah. Well, I like this.
You know what, though? I just thought of something. Can I amend my earlier statement? The time where I think it's actually very helpful, because when I find it most odd and off-putting is when someone literally says, can I show you my work? Because the question both in the back of my mind and sometimes I verbalize it is, to what end? You know, like, what are you trying to... Have you ever had that where a cartoonist just goes, can I show you my work, and then plops it down, and you're like, well, what do you want me to say?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
The thing that I find helpful, actually, and this is when I'm actually most helpful to other cartoonists, because I do want to give back and help out, is if you ask me very specific questions at conventions, I tend to actually give very specific answers. Like, how do I do XYZ? You know, and then I'll sit down and I'll talk to you about how to do XYZ. But you can't just plop your work down and say, fix it, you know, or which is essentially what someone's doing in broad strokes, you know.
Well, it depends on whether or not they're getting in touch with you for I forgot my train of thought now. Oh, it depends on whether or not they get in touch with you to better their work, or if they're like, could you put this in front of somebody bigger than you? Like, can you take this back with you to your publisher? And
I think, you know, sometimes it's an ego stroke thing too, because when I first had the Everything Cartooning book out, I would have a stack of those at my table, and people would come up and say, you know, could you tell me, give me some pointers on improving my cartooning? And I'd point to the book that I'd have selling there for $13, $14 and say, everything I think about the subject at this point is in that book.
And then they'd walk away probably.
And I'd never made a sale that way. You know, that they weren't interested in. They wanted me to do what this is probably me being a little bit coarse, but I think in a lot of those situations, what they're really saying is, tell me how good I am.
Well, I know.
And I'll go further, and this is why it's one of those situations where I'm kind of a jerk about it, is because I think what people are really asking for is they're saying, tell me the shortcut. What is the shortcut? And there is no shortcut. The shortcut is you've got to work a long time for very many years, working very hard and continually keeping your editorial eye open to changes you need to make in your work. And
that's
most
true.
Most people want just to be able to walk up, read one thing and have all the answers, or have someone tell them two sentences and have all the answers, and it doesn't work that way, you know?
Yeah, that's the hardest thing, is that when they come up and they say, well, what do you think of it? And it's clear that they've only drawn 10, and to them maybe they think, Oh, to draw 100, that's an enormous number. No, come back when you've drawn 100. Come back when you've drawn 300. Because right. those are the numbers where you really start to figure out what you're doing.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Who's clackety-clacking away there?
Me, I apologize.
Oh. He's playing WoW.
I'm not playing WoW. Stop it.
I gotta level up.
Someone has asked me a question here in my studio, and I was communicating it to them without interrupting the podcast with typing, but I managed to still interrupt.
So on to the
I didn't
mailbag.
Appreciate that criticism.
Scott, we know you're a busy man.
I am sorry. I thought there might be just a simple solution as moving the mic somewhat. I didn't mean to make you stop doing what you're doing.
Oh wait, I have a button right here that will again if I just had, could have just turned it off.
I'm sorry. Now I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. All right, so Brad, go to the
mailbag. Well, let's talk about this. What's wrong with this mic?
Why am I crying so much?
Dave, did you say you had a mailbag question this week?
I did. Let me find it, and in the meantime, I will fill the.
Oh, I can fill because we got a comment that I just want to throw in that I don't think is a discussion comment, so I can vamp for you a couple minutes.
Okay, sure.
A good friend of ours named Kathy Bladorn writes in and says, "I listen to WW regularly and enjoy it, even though I don't draw webcomics, I just read them. But I wanted to write to you in your discussion of quotes on books that occurred to me. I read those. I have bought books solely because of a couple authors I like wrote something nice on them. Now, I won't buy it with just one quote. I know these people probably get paid or get kickbacks or something. But if it's a whole raft of authors I like, then I'm much more likely to get it because it's probably going to be similar to their books. I'll probably enjoy it. Maybe this is just some sort of complex marketing scheme, but it works, and it's gotten me to read books by authors I've never heard of. Would it get me to read comic collections by people I've never read? Maybe, if I like the art." We were talking about quotes on books, and she had a pretty good thought on it. I don't know that it's a discussion topic necessarily, but it is good to hear that perspective.
Yeah. I, you know what, and I read that, and I thought, well, yeah, that's good. That was good input. But my thought continues to be that you can get a sampling of comic art within a couple of pages, whereas if I'm trying to decide whether to buy a new long-form fiction, it takes a little bit longer, and you kind of rely on the quotes more, don't you think?
I agree with what you just said. We're in
I think we're
in a unique position to be able to give someone a taste of our work very quickly.
Yeah.
I can tell within a couple pages if I'm going to love it or hate it.
I was going to say if you are printing a book and you're thinking of putting quotes on it, then put quotes on that. If all your quotes are like, "I don't know what this strip is, but read it because he told me to put a quote on the back," you know, then that's worthless. That's not good to put on there.
Yeah, but
done.
I think the quotes have to be as entertaining or more entertaining than anything else that you could have put on that cover. Do you know what I mean? They've got to justify their real estate.
And that's true.
If it's just something that says, "Hey, this person draws well, and he or she is really funny," well, you know what? That's not cutting it. You know, it's got to be something better than that.
The entertainment factor of those quotes is inversely proportional to the fame of the person providing it.
I wonder if the
president said, "This is great," that's all he needs to say.
Right. But if it's Joe Blow writing the quote, it better have some pretty nice wording. Exactly. That's a really great thought. It's the inverse proportion from cleverness to fame.
Here's the one quote I put on the back of one of my books that I thought was really effective in promoting the book because in a clever way. Someone asked Milo George, who was an editor of the Comics Journal back when PvP was first getting popular, why they never reviewed webcomics, which seems kind of absurd now, but at the time it was not a odd question. And his response was a quote on the back of my first book. "The reason PvP hasn't received any coverage in the journal is because it's a leaky bucket of tepid crap, so mediocre, trite, and boring that it's not worth wasting an inch of type to kick around." And I put that on the back of the book. And I got more comments on that quote. People just thought that was so awesome that he had said that and I had put it on the back of the book.
Well, there is that. There's the anti-endorsement endorsement.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, if you can look into – and I don't know whether that's good luck, bad luck. Probably felt like bad luck at the time, but when you saw people reacting to it on the book, it turned out to be good luck.
Yeah.
It was fun
and
stuff.
Here's something else that I just thought. A quote on the back of or on the front of your book is much more acceptable for the first book, your introductory book.
That's
and
true.
After that, I think you've got to stand on your own.
That's true.
Huh.
But that's just a thought that popped into my head. And this was not going to be a discussion question. So, Dave, did you find the mailbag?
Oh, I was so entranced by your voice. I actually, yes, I have it.
That happens. That happens a lot. We should bring it up.
All right, so this is a question from Jeremy Burleigh, and Jeremy, forgive me if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. His website is www.optichouse.com, all one word, optic as in the eye doctor, optichouse.com. He says, "Hello, guys. I'm very interested in switching over to drawing with a tablet instead of drawing on paper. However, I find it much harder to spend prolonged hours in front of a computer instead of a drawing table. It probably wouldn't be so bad if I didn't spend most of my day in front of a computer for my day job. Any suggestions besides taking frequent breaks? I know that's for the best, but it kind of messes up the creative flow." So I know more of you guys are spending more time in front of a computer as the days go on, and I thought this would be a good one to talk about. How do you keep the creative flow working? How do you keep the eye strain from killing you? What are the secrets?
Since you're learning to use the Wacom tablet now for the first time, you can do this. It's been harder for me because I learned how to use it at a desk. But my advice to you is to train yourself to use it while on a laptop while sitting on a couch.
Really?
Yes. If you can learn to use that tablet in your lap, I think you are ahead of the game.
And Scott, where do you position the laptop? To the side of you?
Well, the way I do it is, and I've been practicing, I've not posted anything I've done, but what I do is I have the laptop on a TV tray in front of me in the couch.
Okay.
And then the tablet's plugged into it. I bought a neat little, $20 little laptop stand. So it gets the laptop pretty high, and it's at eye level as I'm sitting there. And you can pull it forward so it's, you know, pretty close. And it's a much more comfortable position. You can be in an easy chair on the couch and, kick one leg up over the other and, cross. I don't know. How do you say that when you cross one leg?
So you're saying make it as difficult as possible at the outset.
Why? No.
After that.
Listen, ask yourself. God, my frustration level on this podcast is incredibly high. If you can learn how to work on a tablet the same way you would draw in a sketchbook almost, I think you're better off. I mean, there are days I would just love to take my tablet into the couch and sit with it and draw on it. But I can't make it work unless I have it positioned in a certain way in front of my monitor and I'm sitting at it, because that's how I learn.
I don't know. The way I did it was I don't like to have the tablet on the desk. I like to have it in my lap, but I like to be sitting at a desk. I don't know. I guess that's not much different from what you just said. You're just sitting in a couch.
It's pretty much identical to what I just said, minus the caustic, snippy banter afterwards.
Look, Scott, what I'm trying to say is I'm right and you're wrong about the exact same opinion.
I'm Scotty Grumpy Puss for the rest of this podcast.
2008, everybody. 2008. Come on.
Starting out with a bang.
Well, I don't have any opinion on this because I've spent almost zero time using one of those tablets, so I don't have anything intelligent to say. Although that's never stopped me in the past.
I'm continually looking for ways to make this not a problem because my eyes suffer from working on computers too long. But I also have, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you guys, but I have costal clavicular syndrome, which is sort of like the hand syndrome. What do you call the other one where your hands?
Carpal tunnel.
Mine is actually in my right shoulder, where your clavicle and the costal region and the clavicle come together, and there's a nerve bundle right there.
and my shoulders roll forward when I'm typing or when I'm on computer, and it's my entire right hand goes cold and numb. Oh my God, it's terrible. So I've got to figure out a better system. And it's part one of the reasons why I've stayed working in traditional media, because I can't work on a computer for very long.
Oh no, is that a real thing?
Because it is a real thing.
Sometimes I feel that, and I thought, shake it off.
Don't WebMD yourself into an ailment, Chris.
And Chris, sometimes
I have cervical cancer.
Hold on, let me freak Chris out. Chris, sometimes at the end of the day, I get really tired and my eyes get sleepy, and I feel like I just want to lie down. And it turns out it's scurvy. So Chris, you might want to have that looked at.
And about three times a day, don't you get hungry? they say a lot of times.
I do.
That could be a pretty good sign of herpes.
I like
Brad. They say. They say. I wouldn't know, but.
Well,
I have heard.
Pay no attention to that thing by my lip. That's just something I'm hearing. Well, what do you say, guys? One more. Well, here's one that's somewhat topical, and it doesn't have to do. This has to do with webcomics as a general medium. And it says a person by the name of Birdie from superfightfight.tk.
Whoa.
Hello.
Ooh, any dashes in there?
Super Fight, and then fight is twice, the F-I-G-H-T, superfightfight.tk, and Birdie writes...
Wait, before you start, Brad, what is the suffix TK? Where is that?
It's Tokelau, a territory of New Zealand.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not. They make their entire... Gary talked about this one time. They make all their money off selling that domain.
Oh, is that like Tuvalu, who did TV?
Oh, maybe that's Tuvalu. Sorry.
Well, okay, actually, it's sure it's the same.
I know, but I understand Tuvalu, but why would anyone want the suffix of TK?
Because it's not com. It's new and fresh.
I'm editing the link. I'm editing the URL out of this podcast.
Why?
Because I already find the first strip on this site incredibly offensive and awful.
Oh, all right. Let's move forward.
Okay, it says, hey, guys. Free Comic Book Day is approaching, and I was working on an entry for my webcomic to be submitted. And then I read an interview, and I found out that Diamond is not printing books for the Free Comic Book Day that are from webcomics. Mm-hmm. I want to know how you feel about webcomics and their future, and what do you think about Diamond's decision? This is something that's really kind of become a little bit of an issue this past couple of weeks. We've got a lot of talk, and what's your thoughts on it?
I think that if Penny Arcade wanted to do a Free Comic Book Day book, it would be fine. I think that it's the fact that Diamond has declared some war against webcomics is a premature decision to come to in analyzing what's happened. Diamond has always, since before I worked with them, had strict editorial standards. They pick and choose what they want to promote. And they have minimums and they have caps. And if you don't meet them, they don't carry you anymore. They're not...
They don't have an agenda.
They don't have an agenda. They're not exercising any agenda beyond the one they've had for the last 20 years, which is, you know, they choose what's in their catalog. They're not... Diamond is not some... government program to provide. I don't know what.
No, I understand what you're saying. Your book, somebody's book, has the same chance of Diamond saying, "Yeah, well, we're not interested."
I just think it's funny that when Keenspot's Free Comic Book Day comics get rejected by Diamond, that the first thought is that there's an agenda, and not that Diamond didn't like the quality of the comics. You know, it's like that's the first thought is there's an agenda. And that bothers me. I think it belittles the community and of webcomics, you know? I mean, look, step up. If you want to be in Diamond, you've got to step up your game a little bit. And
yeah, I don't...
Free Comic Book Day is not about letting everyone just throw their stuff up there. They're applying editorial standards to that as well. They're trying to bring people into their industry.
Right, right. And that's the bottom line for me, is they're trying to bring people into their industry. And if you're not working in their industry or actively promoting their industry the rest of the year, why would they necessarily care anyway, you know?
That's just it. That's kind of the thought that came into my mind, is I can kind of see Diamond's point of view in that the whole idea between Free Comic Book Day is they want to bring somebody who doesn't come to a comic shop into a comic shop, and they lure them with free comics, which is a pretty good idea. If their idea works and that person comes back next week and doesn't see titles on the stands from those free comics that they got, then it's a little bit confusing.
And
maybe
misleading.
Right. So if they pick up a Keen Spot or anybody else, I mean, we're talking about Keen Spot here because that's the one that kind of got a lot of the attention. But if they pick up a Keen Spot Free Comic Book Day publication, and then they turn around the next, maybe a month later, and come back and say, "Hey, I want to pick up that one of those Keen Spot titles," and there's nothing on the comic stands.
Then they just spend a lot of money to print free comic books. And
yeah,
if we're
going to
criticize Diamond, can we criticize one of the 89,000 legitimate things to be upset with Diamond about, and not try to invent some ridiculous agenda? Diamond has been printing Keen Spot Free Comic Book Day titles for years, and they've been printing them for all the years that Keen Spot's been a regular publisher with Diamond, and no one claimed they had a pro web comics agenda during those years. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And no offense to Super Super Fight Fight, but you know, there's look, you want it to be this way too, so don't take this as a slight. Not everybody gets to have everything. And if you want to be a sponsor or a gold member, what is it called? If you're a Free Comic Book Day comic, there's gold, silver, and
gold dancer.
Yes. If you want to be a gold dancer. But anyway, look, if you want to be in Diamond, you got to meet their editorial standards, and you've got to bring your A game. And, you know, it's not, they're not some public, can't speak today.
The default isn't that they're going to take you.
Yes.
That means if they don't take you, they hate your guts.
They're not a social service for webcomics.
Right. And also, this is one of those classic cases of an artist looking for justification elsewhere rather than in and within their own career. Is that this is a bigger equivalent of a kid walking up to you at a convention and going, "What do you think of my work?" and then feeling rejected when you give them honesty, you know?
Hey, it's kind of like a theme show.
Yeah, it is.
We did come back to that.
And also, I think a Free Comic Book Day is trying to be all ages friendly, and I think a lot of the Keen Spot titles they were promoting were not all ages. So I mean, let's at least meet the requirements, minimum requirements, before we start. I don't know. I just don't like the idea of. And I have lots of problems with Diamond, and I wish there were more distributors and it wasn't such a monopoly, but I have lots of friends of Diamond, too, and I love comics as well as web comics. I don't know.
Yeah, but I guess my point is different, is that like, if I submitted Sheldon for a Free Comic Book Day and it didn't get taken, okay, 5 minutes of like, oh, woe is me. But the bottom line is, I'm still making a living off my comic strip. What do I care? You know, if you're fine and content with your own business, you're not going to take that as a slight. You'll just be like, all right, one less thing to do. Let's move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
It's when you're looking for external justification or not justification, when you're looking for external a feel-good factor.
Validation.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. When you're looking for external validation and it doesn't come, that's when it's going to be a problem. But if the validation is within your own career, who cares?
It's either a good or a bad thing that all that Wikipedia stuff kind of blew over before the inception of this podcast.
Oh, why?
Because we could go on forever about, that's not fair that we're not in there.
Well, you know my position on that is, why does it matter? Why do you care? It's probably not fair, but why are you upset about it?
Well, ultimately, whether or not you're upset about Wikipedia, it doesn't matter. You know, so maybe spend your time more wisely.
We know what web comics really is, guys. We've got bigger fish to fry than Wikipedia and Free Comic Book Day. Come on.
Yeah.
I say that to all the people listening, too. You guys got bigger fish to fry than worrying about Diamond's agenda against webcomics and Wikipedia. You guys are going to take on the world, and you guys are going to be the next Charles Schultz's and Gabe and Tycho's and after us. So start working on that. Don't worry about that stuff, this stuff.
I'm already looking for the next me.
I have found the next me, and ironically, it's me. It's me. I'm back. I'm back again. I'm bringing Scotty back.
Hey, guys, I've got some good news. I found the next me. It's me, and he's immensely handsome. So there you go.
Snap-a-doo.
Snap-a-doo. All right, well, what do you say, lads? Shall we wrap it up?
I'm feeling good there.
I think that's a good show.
That's a Brad-worthy show, I think.
I think we found our next show.
Am I right? See you later. Hey, who's doing the outro, this first outro of 2008?
Let's start it off with a Brad Geiger outro.
I have been practicing, but I think I can do this.
But half a glass of sherry should make it work.
I'm on to sherry number
three. Hey, Chris, Chris, let's you and me provide some gentle background music for Brad as he does the outro.
Okay, here we go.
You guys have been listening to Webcomics Weekly with your four friends, Scott Kurtz at bbconline.com, Christopher Straub at starslip.com, Dave Kellett at sheldoncomics.com, and me, I'm Brad Geiger. Well done, Bob.
What?
It was supposed to be well done, and I couldn't decide whether to say folks or people, so it came out as
folks.
Well done, folks.
Wait, what's your URL again?
Mine, evil-comic.com.
I think I mean, the joke was funny that I talked over your... But you've got to actually get it out afterwards. All right.
They know us all.
Yeah, they know us.
Our fame precedes us.
Does it?
In some
My
cases.
Fame precedes
Hey, guys, can I throw in one last New Year's resolution before we go?
Yeah.
I resolve that I am going to find a way to get Wacom to give us all some of those small centiques.
Oh,
come on,
I like
right?
That
Let's make that a resolution. They should give us that stuff.
Let's do it.
There's going to be a rep at Emerald City. Let's find a way to charm them out of some of those things.
Let's wine and dine them.
We send Brad Geiger over with two glasses of sherry. We are.
I'll even unbutton my shirt.
No, Brad, no. We want the Cinti. Oh.
And then later in the hotel, he comes back with the bare ones, the nice ones. And then we're like, oh my God, Brad, how did you get, you don't want to know, but how did, you don't want
we will
to
never
know.
Talk of this.
We'll never speak of this antique.
Brad, the rest of the convention is just using that antimicrobial hand cream all day long.
All over my body.
And then later I confront the Wacom rep, and he's like, look, I swear to God, Brad came in, he took a sip of a 7-Up and passed out. We felt really sorry for him, so we gave him the Cintiq. The man needs help.
he totally psyched himself out.
All right, that's a good ending to our first show. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, with me laying on the floor.